First, though, as you know, it's time to check in with the USA. As usual, columnist with the National Magazine and executive director of the Dart Center for Journalism and Trauma at Columbia University, Bruce Shapiro, is with us. Bruce, while you were sleeping, history was being made in Singapore. Welcome.
Well, some kind of history. We don't yet know kind of what. Hello, Tracy. Good to be here.
I was going to say, when you look at, you know, there was just so much angst around this in the build-up, and there was so much coverage of it. It didn't matter what you tuned into or what you read from all over the world. All eyes were focused on Singapore. How do we separate the symbolism of the moment for what is going to be some substance going forward?
Symbolism and maybe, you know, spectacle versus substance. Well, look, there has been a joint communique signed and waived by President Trump. We don't yet know what's in it, and that's going to be one of the key questions. You know, the president claims that the U.S. and South Korea are making big progress toward denuclearizing the peninsula. Look, if the geopolitics and isolation of North Korea, as well as perhaps the degree of human rights abuse within its borders, can be reduced, and in particular, if there are fewer nuclear weapons in the world, that will certainly turn out to be a major equipment. The president has used the phrase very quickly to describe the dismantling of nuclear weapons in North Korea. I somehow suspect that's not the case. It is true that Trump has agreed to end or suspend U.S. military exercises in Korea for now. Look, when you're talking about nuclear weapons, talking is always better than not talking. And we can't forget, of course, that at the end of the Cold War, it was Ronald Reagan and Mikhail Gorbachev who made dramatic strides toward reducing the number of nuclear weapons and ultimately denuclearizing a number of countries like Ukraine and Eastern Europe. So there's hope here. At the same time, these are both Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump, both leaders who favor spectacle over substance, who are volatile, who are very difficult on their own negotiators. We heard, we've read accounts saying that the U.S. negotiating team felt not backed up by the president in the course of preparation for this summit. And with the long view of history, American negotiations with authoritarians have a decidedly mixed record. You could look, as I said, at Reagan and the success of negotiating with Gorbachev, or you could look at Roosevelt, the ailing FDR at Yalta, and what many now deem, you know, the kind of being outflanked by Stalin as another example. And you know, let's not forget that Trump, for all of his bluster and bravado, comes nowhere near the brutal authoritarianism of Kim Jong-un, who has had relatives and rivals machine gunned in front of other party leaders. This is someone who rules by terror. So we don't know where it's going to go. We do know that it is for better or worse, a historic moment.
And this is the really interesting thing, I think, because, you know, under any kind of view, you would have to say that Kim Jong-un is a person that should be in front of a war crimes tribunal. And yet, when you look at the conversation that is happening on the Korean Peninsula itself between North and South, you get this overwhelming sense that all the people really want is reunification and a guarantee of peace. And they're willing to do that deal with whoever it's going to take. And at this point, it's Kim Jong-un.
Well, reunification is certainly a long way away. And we are talking about two sovereign countries. I think that what an area in which I'm not an expert, but my limited sense of what's important politically, at least in the short run, is the normalization of relations, families being able to visit one another, and perhaps some easing of the isolation of North Korea. I mean, look, the problem with nuclear weapons negotiations historically is that they have involved making deals with brutal authoritarian regimes. That was the case during the Cold War with the Soviet Union. That's the case with China. And of course, the U.S., while a democratic nation, remains the only country to have actually used a nuclear weapon. Mm. So the moral calculus of nuclear arms reduction is always filled with irony. That said, there could be no more ironic meeting than between this most authoritarian of American leaders and this, in the long history of volatile and brutal North Korean leaders, probably the most volatile. So, you know, we'll just have to see.
We will. And we're getting used to this image of Donald the Disruptor, aren't we? Traveling around the world and doing things he says he's going to do. But let's see what the long-term impact of all of this is going to be. What about the G7 summit? Because we were led to believe that President Trump had much bigger things on his mind than the G7 communique. And that was the reason for his outburst in calling the Canadian Prime Minister very dishonest and weak in a tweet from Air Force One.
I think you can blame it on the summit, but the reality is that this is what Trump does. Annoying allies, and in particular annoying American allies, is a role that he enjoys very much. And look, he is an economic nationalist, and the rest of the allies are liberal globalists. And that's a very different conception of how the world works. It's not just a volatile person and a clown against the serious guys. It is also ideological. I would say that he recognizes as well that Trump recognizes that the European allies in particular are fractured and fragmented right now. Canada, very closely tied to Europe, much more closely than the United States in both its political system and in its relationships, is part of that mix. Trump understands in his gut, maybe in his brain, but certainly in his gut, that with those countries themselves fractured and fragmented over immigration and migration and economic populism and Brexit and all the rest of it, he can go in and behave however he wants. It plays to the base, his base at home, a base that is narrow but deep, which he really likes doing. Conveys a sense that he doesn't have to care. On the other hand, it also accelerates something that was underway even without him, which is the fracturing and fragmenting of an economic order that has stood in place for a couple of generations. And it will be very interesting to see what survives, not just the bluster and bullying and tweets, but the imposition of tariffs, the creation of trade tensions in a highly vulnerable world economy.
The future of the G7 looks as though it's on pretty shaky ground at the moment. What about the re-indictment of Paul Manafort, President Trump's ex-campaign chief? He's back in hot water again.
Well, he is. And of course, this is all this global stuff is making Trump very happy, but it's a gigantic distraction from the slowly but inexorably tightening noose of the Mueller investigation. Paul Manafort, the former campaign manager, was caught doing something someone who's wearing an ankle bracelet shouldn't do. Evidently, he, according to the Mueller team, Manafort was trying to persuade friends and associates to lie to the special counsel and protect him from their testimony. This is suborning perjury. This is a major crime. The Mueller has gone to court and asked a judge, a federal judge, to put Paul Manafort back in jail. And if so, that will greatly increase the pressure on him, of course, to roll over on Trump. I mean, that this is very, very bad news for the president, and very, very bad news for the president's family and associates, who are all implicated in one way or another in these various conversations, negotiations, and deals. Manafort, of course, has a long corrupt history of his own that well predates Donald Trump. This is someone deeply immersed in the very, very corrupt politics of Eastern Europe, and as well as authoritarian regimes from the Philippines to Zimbabwe. But he's in very, very deep trouble, and that is not good news for a president who already is distressed and annoyed at the vulnerability of his administration.
Bruce, you give us a really nice segue, because coming up next on the program, we are going to talk about Russia, we're going to talk about the mafia, we're going to talk about the FIFA World Cup and everything in between. But good to talk to you. Thank you for your time.
Glad to be here.